32, ja.
Sarganam is
Adi.
Antaha.
Cha.
Madhyam.
Cha.
Aham.
Arjuna.
Adhyatma Vidya.
Vidyanam.
Vada.
Sargana
Madhyantascha. Madhyam Chaiva Majana.
Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam.
Vada Prabhadatamaham.
Krishna willing, I'll speak a few words about education and Varnashram as we have our meeting coming up about our Varnashram and educational projects, which is why I chose this verse, because Adhyatma Vidya Vidyanam, Krishna says, among all kinds of vidya, or knowledge, or education, Adhyatma Vidya, spiritual knowledge, is an opulence of Krishna. The highest and best kind of knowledge is spiritual knowledge. And that is, of course, very much in contrast to mundane knowledge. Education can be in all kinds of fields, so many different kinds of activities and theories. So education can be in many, many kinds of fields, but for persons who understand what spiritual knowledge is, they can clearly distinguish between spiritual knowledge and material knowledge. But persons who only know material knowledge, they take spiritual knowledge to be an imagination, not really knowledge at all. Long time ago, I saw a quote by a mundane scholar with some oblique praise, you could say, of Krishna consciousness. It said that the Krishna conscious movement has a philosophical system which is elaborate and, I can't remember the words exactly, but elaborate, and it makes sense within its own presumptions. And the mundane educational outlook of the modern age is agnostic. Not in the sense, agnostic literally means not Gnostic, not believing in God. But the term is generally used to mean one who doesn't believe in God and doesn't reject the possibility of there being God. He just says, well, we can't know. And even Richard Dawkins, who had a spell of fame for some time as the most outspoken proponent of atheism, in the world at the present time. He is, by his own definition, agnostic, because he says, I don't discount the possibility that there could be God, because we don't know. But he says the chances of it are very small. Well, the chances of there being a big bang and then everything ending up with us here is also very small. Just like I was hearing Srila Prabhupada yesterday, how he recounted how many years ago he had spoken to an Arya Samaji who doesn't believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila, the Arya Samaji had specifically rejected that there could be a person from whose navel a lotus grows, and upon a lotus appears a four-headed person. Which is quite reasonable if you're a reasonable atheist. But Srila Prabhupada said, okay, so this is inconceivable. You have to accept it as inconceivable. But Srila Prabhupada said that, you see, there's a coconut tree. And at the top of the coconut tree are coconuts with water inside them. So can you explain how the water goes up? Where is the pipe? Where is the pump? Now, probably modern day botanists have some kind of explanation. But they can't. There's no satisfactory explanation of how there could be such an entity as a coconut tree with coconuts, which we cut, and it's very pleasant to drink and very good to drink unless you've got a sitting down throat, as it's said in Hindi. In English, it's called lost my voice. But there's so many plants and so many medicines, just like, take a note, I need some alushi. In Gujarati, it's called alushi, good for arushi. Arushi, is it good for colds and coughs? In Sanskrit, it's vasak. So please make a note, I need some of that. So anyway, I'm saying the point that the educational system of or the scientific outlook is agnostic, in as much as they say, well, we can't know anything for sure, but we can look at everything and analyze it and come to some conclusions. And then later, maybe someone will come to some better conclusion. They don't have any faith that there is any absolute knowledge. Now, that would be all right if they accepted that our intelligence has its limitations and that someone somewhere knows what's going on. Otherwise, all this wouldn't exist. But they just leave it at that. So the academia is agnostic, that they can't say anything for sure. But they have to accept some things. You can't even begin to live and act and work in this world unless we accept some axioms. For instance, I am speaking to you, and I take it for granted that you understand the words that I'm saying. There's no way to prove it. There's no way to prove that you even exist. But if anyone says that, well, I don't believe that anything exists, we have a very good philosophical reply that's called kicking them in the face with boots. And when they fall on the ground screaming with blood coming, you can say, don't worry, it doesn't exist. Nothing exists. So this is the answer to skepticism. Of course, we don't literally do it. Maybe we should sometime. Just to make the point, put it on YouTube. Just the answer to skepticism, that you don't exist, I don't exist, nothing exists. Okay, then pour some petrol on them and light a match and say, anyway, it was nice to know you. You never existed anyway. Bye-bye. Don't take this literally because, well, there is a lot of prison preaching to do, but that's not the best way to access it. You never know, they might hang you. Anyway, the academia is agnostic. So there is a sharp contrast, I was saying, between mundane knowledge and spiritual knowledge. And in Vedic culture, there is also. There is paravidya, aparavidya. And most of the Vedic knowledge deals with which one? Aparavidya. Trividya. What is that? Trigunya, Vishaya Veda. The Vedas, at least what is extant in the world, mostly deals with matters of this world. But there's a background there of Adhyatma Vidya, which Krishna speaks about in this verse. So all the Vedas, including the Upavedas, the Ayurveda and the Jyotish and Dhanurveda, Gandharva Veda, there are so many Upavedas. But the knowledge system, it's all one whole. It's all in harmony. If we understand that the background is the Adhyatma Vidya. That's why the philosophies like Sankhya and Yoga, and they're incomplete, because they do recognize Adhyatma Vidya, but they don't have it. Without understanding Vishnu, then one may be expert in yoga and so many things, but nate vidu swatatingi Vishnu durasya ye by. It's on the bahirata manina. They become interested in some external gain. So I'm going to read a quote now from someone who's talking about the modern education. I didn't make a note of where I got the quote from. I think it's possibly from Robert Graves, who was a polymath, which means someone who's learned in many fields. Didn't help him much. Okay, education as a social institution necessarily has many ends. Ends means, here means purposes, that compete with each other and sometimes even contradict each other. Now that may be in Vedic culture also. If we don't see the background is Adhyatma Vidya. Because someone who's very interested in dharma, then their outlook on Vedic knowledge will contradict someone who's very interested in karma. And that's the difference between Yudhishthira and Duryodhana. Yudhishthira subscribed to Vedic knowledge, and Duryodhana did in name only. So they had a difference of outlook, even though they were in the same gurukul. They were classmates, but their outlook was different. And sometimes the ends may contradict each other. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita, it's something sensational, revolutionary. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna. And then later, Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mamaikam Sharanam Vraja. And that's taken on by the Bhagavatam. Dharma, what kind of a dharma? What are you talking about? He's not talking about Osho. He's talking about what's taught by Vyasadeva in the Vedas. So it's very revolutionary statements, which contradicts, may seem to contradict what's given in the Vedas. But then, what is that? Sarvanata utapane. What's the next line? Samplutodake. Sarvata samplutodake. Tam. Tavan sarveshu vedeshu. Brahmani. Brahmanas tatvijanata. Yeah, one who can understand the underlying purpose, then he doesn't get a contradiction. He finds everything is in. He gets everything from what he needs without. He doesn't find a contradiction. And all these Vedic schools, Sankhya, Yoga, Karnad, all these, they're all trying to harmonize the statements of the Vedas. The Mayavadis will try to harmonize the highly personalistic statements about Brahman by saying they're subordinate to the impersonalistic statements. And the whole idea of Adhyatma Vidya is thrown out by the Karma Mimamsa, who say, oh, that's just for useless people. They don't know how to enjoy this world, so they want to renounce it. So like this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's understanding that coordinates and coalesces everything, all the statements of the Vedas. So going back to the discussion of the mundane education in the modern age, our universities ideally pass a cultural heritage from the past to the present. This would be written in the 1940s. But no, the modern education is throwing out all the past culture with multiculturalism, deconstructionism, and other neo-Mayavad ideas. Krishna Kirti can tell you all about it. He studied it in some depth, how they reject all the old ideas that these universities, famous universities, Oxford, Harvard, Sorbonne, they have the idea, oh, these are great institutions which have transmitted our culture for generations. What's that culture? Drinking beer. But in fact, that Gyanadas, one disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he was admitted in Cambridge University. And at the opening speech when he first went, he must have been 18 years old. He's closer to 80 now. So the professor who was greeting all the incoming students said that the most important thing you have to learn, Cambridge University, highly prestigious, the most important thing you have to learn is how to hold your drink. And for those of you who don't know what that means, which is probably most of you, because you come from a different culture, hold your drink means you can drink 5 pints of beer at least and still operate as a fairly coordinated human being. You don't collapse on the ground. You need to take at least 10 pints. So it's to hold your drink. That means you're accustomed to drinking alcohol so that you can drink, and you're still sober to some extent. And you'll find venerable elderly men in the Western countries with blue noses, right? That means they're an alcoholic, and it's considered quite okay. So he said, the most important thing you have to learn is how to hold your drink, because you can get by in life without a university degree, which is what they're going to the university for. But you can't get by without being able to hold your drink. This is a social statement. You can't get by in British society if you can't drink social. Drinking is a social activity. So you have to be able to drink a few drinks, and then that's the main point of your education, he said. Which for Gyanadas Prabhu, I don't know what his name was at the time, his name is now Naimi Maharaj. He was initiated as a sannyasi. Gavasta Naimi Maharaj by Narayan Maharaj. So he that immediately thought, what the hell am I doing here? You don't have to go to university to learn how to drink every ruffian on the street knows how to do that. So anyway, cultural heritage, so that's what I'm saying, the cultural heritage of the Western world, it's based on drinking. Drinking in English language, when you say drinking, it means drinking alcohol, unless you qualify it. It's just like in Indian languages, if you say, have you taken rice? Maybe not here, but have you taken rice? It means, have you eaten? So in English language, you say, well, we were drinking together. That means drinking alcohol, not drinking milkshake. It's so deeply in the culture. So passing the cultural heritage from the past to the present is a major point of mundane education. And Gurukul education also. A major point is transferring the culture. But practically what we're doing is trying to rebuild the culture, which is so badly knocked down. Okay, another point. Create an informed citizenry. That's considered very important in the modern education because it's democracy. So people have to vote. They should be give an informed vote. Not like here in India where you round up all the people and they, I don't know how much they bribe them, but you give them a bribe and then they're supposed to vote for you. And if they don't, you cut off their hands. Well, CPIM in West Bengal used to do that. And so I was told, Jyoti Basu, the chief minister, when someone complained to him, said, no, it's all right. We gave them artificial arms. See, it's okay. It's under control. So create an informed citizenry. In Vedic culture also, everyone is informed. Formal education is only for a few. But everyone knows, like Srila Prabhupada said, even the common uneducated man knows that there's a future life. I'm in my present situation due to my previous activities. There's a sadhu I should bow down. Srila Prabhupada said that even the uneducated farmer is more educated in the real knowledge than the people in the Western countries. Even the big professors, and Srila Prabhupada often many times gave the example of Professor Kotovsky in Moscow as an example of someone who's the head of the Indology department in a prominent university, and he outright flat rejected that there is a future life. And Srila Prabhupada is obviously struck by the ignorance of this person. So there is spiritual education for everyone via the Ramayana, Mahabharata and Puranas being recited and people will hear. Then another thing, the universities of support, develop capacities for rational debate and inquiry. You weren't here, Krishna Kirti. I was just talking about how modern education doesn't transmit the cultural heritage, but it's deliberately aimed at destroying cultural heritage, the modern universities today. So develop capacities for rational debate and inquiry. That is spoiled by modern education. Specifically, they have the, what do they call that? That chilling off corner. What's that called? Huh? Safe spaces, where you can go and no one can call you an ugly mug or something. And you're not allowed to say anything which might upset anyone, which practically means you can't say anything because anyone can be upset by anything. And it is what would have been called, maybe even just one or two generations ago, insane. And that's what's going on in the universities. In America, especially. Teach vocational skills needed by the economy. That is the real purpose of mundane education. To train people up to be a automaton, like a robot, in the economy. and provide opportunities for upward mobility. You understand that? You stop translating. Yeah. To name a few of these ends. Now, our Gurukul is with a completely different outlook. Some of the techniques might be the same, but even the techniques we were discussing recently, the modern education, the techniques are aimed at educating people of Shudra mentality who are not meant for any higher education. All this empathetic listening and then icebreaker, take their opinion, is all nonsense. Brahmin boys come with good brain, good culture, and they have to come and hear, that's all. But because people, they can't hear in the modern age because their brain is so distracted. Therefore, they have to have all these different educational techniques. Otherwise, in Vedic culture, someone is educated, and then without, he doesn't have to go to get trained in how to teach, but he teaches. What does he do? He speaks what he heard. And if the boys are not willing to listen, then they're not fit for the Gurukul anyway. Then you have the Panchatantra for what was his name, Sharma in the Panchatantra. He had to educate the princes who were not at all interested in education. So then they're just telling a whole bunch of stories and this and that. But that's, Panchatantra is not Adhyatma Vidya. It's not spiritual knowledge. So the very word Gurukul, it doesn't mean school. It means the place of the guru. We can say, you can. It's roughly translated. Is it? What would you say is a literal translation of Gurukul? Jai Nityanand? It would literally mean where there are gurus are gathered together. Is it not? So, it's the place of the guru. It doesn't say a school, but then what does a guru do? The very word guru means one who teaches. But the teaching is formal and informal. It's 24 hours a day. And the main purpose, as Srila Prabhupada said always, is to impart good character. It's not, of course, it is important that they learn Adhyatma Vidya, but there's no question of learning Adhyatma Vidya, spiritual knowledge, unless they have good character. And good character is minimally defined as no eating meat, no drinking alcohol, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. Whereas in the schools today, the phones, the children in the schools, they're looking at pornography on their phones. And how is there going to be any good character? Impossible. There's no idea of sense restraint. In Gurukul, the children are trained in how to control their senses. Children, when they're born, they're completely unrestrained in their senses. If they want something, they scream. If they're slightly uncomfortable, they scream. Babies. So they have to be socialized to tolerate distress and not just to... Just they see something they wanted and they have to be trained. No, you have to control. But the modern idea is that you control to the minimum and indulge as much as possible. So the main education, or what they have to learn, it comes very much, if we're talking about training them in character, it very much depends on the character of the gurus. Durvasa Muni had 60,000 disciples. They went to him for education. Seems unusual. He's a very difficult person, but they went to him, 60,000. Must be difficult to be his disciple. But He must have been a good guru. He must have been a good teacher. But that basic principle is there. Sangat sanjayate, karma. One's desires arises from one's association. Therefore, most important in Krishna consciousness is sadhu sangha. We have to associate with devotees. Krishna bhakti janma mool hoy sadhu sangha. The very root of developing Krishna consciousness is association with devotees. Because who we associate with will largely form our character. And it's especially true of children. They need to have very good role models. So teachers or gurus, they have to set an ideal example. Whatever character traits they have, either positive or negative, will be imparted to the children. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he described in his, it's called Swalikita Jivani. I don't know if he gave that title. It just means autobiography. So when he was a young boy in the village school, the teacher had a system of the older boys would train the younger boys, and he'd beat they would control the younger boys, and the teacher himself would thrash the older boys. And then the older boys would thrash the younger boys. And the teacher would tell them, "You bring me some chickpeas from your home tomorrow." And he'd eat. So the boys would have to steal from their home. And eventually the teacher was found out and they drove him out of the village. But you know, Thakur came through as a great Vaishnava Acharya. But generally we'd expect ruffians to come out of such a person of bad character. It's probably a Brahmin by caste, because Brahmins were appointed as teachers. So good and bad qualities are imparted. As far as the education, a lot of it, in terms of formal education, it's mostly theoretical, is it not? It's ideas in the mind. And we do tend to forget that, just like all of us studied science at school. Now, except the one here who's kept in touch with it, we've all forgotten. Maybe you don't even remember the words. Entropy, if you studied chemistry, or if you studied mathematics. What is a hypotenuse? Everyone must have got that. Can anyone remember what a hypotenuse is? You know, okay. Yeah. It's the opposite, the right angle in a, what's that called, a triangle which has equal sides, half, which is half a square. If you put a diagonal line in a square, anyway, I'm just making right angle triangle. Yeah, right angle. Isosceles, okay. Oh, and the hypotenuse is that there's the sine and the cosine and all this kind of thing. See, I don't know. So anyway, I'm just making the point that you just forget it all. You study and you forget. But what remains, and we may not know that, is the influences on our character. That will remain. And that's a lot of the difficulty in trying to educate people in Krishna consciousness, to actually be Krishna conscious, is sakalam vihaya. Just forget it all. You know that verse, right? Sakalam vihaya. You know that verse? Do you still remember it? How does it begin? Hey, sadhava. Dante nitaya trinakam. Yeah. So anyway, sucker, whatever you learned in the past, just forget it all. And te chanya chandra charane kurute anuraga. Just develop full attachment for the lotus feet of Chaitanya Chandra. But it's a very difficult thing. We can say sakalam vihaya, just give up all that nonsense. But it's not that easy, because not only in previous lives, but in this life, we picked up enough nonsense to keep us going in the material world for another few crores of births, just in our school years. So how important it is if we can put into the children in the beginning the thoughts of Krishna and Krishna consciousness and the real purpose of life. Ours is a gurukul. It's not just imparting some academic knowledge. We're not very much concerned with passing exams, but we want to see how the children will come out and live as devotees. That Srila Prabhupada always said, our aim is not to produce big grammarians. That doesn't mean that if someone has ability that we don't train them in Sanskrit grammar and so on. But the real aim is we want to see people who are devotees, or fully devoted to Krishna. That's it. And then their life is perfect. And on top of that, if they can preach Krishna consciousness, so much the better. So it's not that what we can call the theoretical basis, it's not unimportant, or the stuff that remembering shlokas and what they mean, but we want to see how people practically live that in their life, that they've actually taken Krishna consciousness into their heart. And Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aikya, it may make the teachings of the Guru one with the heart. Otherwise, if someone has Bhakti Shastra degree, Bhakti Vaibhav degree, but they don't practice very well, what's the meaning? Both should be there. What is that? Achar kare kehana kare prachar prachar kare kehana kare achar prachar nama name karo hadui karj tumi sarva guru tumi jagat air arj. This Haridas Thakur, Sanatana Goswami said that some people, they behave properly in devotional service, but they don't preach. Some preach, but they don't follow. But you do both in relation to the holy name. Therefore, you are the guru of everyone, and you're the best person in the universe. So ideally, both should be there. But of the two, we want to see that people are practicing. Otherwise, producing big scholars without any practical, without actually being devotees, is meaningless. That means it's an incomplete education. Especially, Srila Prabhupada wanted Gurukul to produce preachers, which is to be a preacher of Krishna consciousness, someone who's dedicated throughout their life to meeting people, imparting knowledge of Krishna. One has to be very fixed in doing so, and mentally robust, because there will be so much opposition which will come, and able to speak with others. Just on a side note here, for preaching, formal training in logic would be very helpful, because you see, much of Srila Prabhupada's preaching was on the platform of logic. Just like that, he gave the example of the coconut and the pie. That logically, you may not believe in God and Achintya Shakti, but take this. This is an example. In medieval universities in Europe, of course, they were founded originally for imparting religious training. But logic and rhetoric, and in ancient Greece, rhetoric, how to speak in public in a way that will influence others, how to answer others. So formal training was that. And it's also done in many Buddhist schools. By schools, I mean here for training young monks. They have training in logic, and still, you just told me recently you happened to come across the Madhvas and Shankarites having formal debates. They've trained in logic, then they meet with each other, and they analyze the Vedic statements according to Vedic rules, but logic is also applied in there, very much there. So, but that's not very useful, because they can only use it when arguing Mayavadis with Dvaitavadis, but it doesn't have any practical application in the world beyond there. It's as if they're living still 800 years ago or something. But we need for the modern training in logic is so that our boys, they can immediately recognize if someone has made a false statement, and they can point it out. They can immediately catch it. By training, it can be done. And then it becomes very difficult to defeat them. And then that's an important part of preaching. So that should be done. And also, we're having our Bhakti Shastra courses. And along with that, we can train the devotees in practical preaching. When someone says this, what do you say? But even apart from that, just recognizing patterns, logical patterns of speaking, illogical patterns. There's Vedic logic and there's Western logic, but there are standard paradigms or whatever, circular arguments, basing a logical conclusion on an unconfirmed premise, and so many things like that. They're technical terms. So, and often you'll find Srila Prabhupada, when he's talking with others, they'd start to say, and he'd cut them out, because they didn't finish what they were saying, but already what they said was a logical inaccuracy. So instead of them going on and developing their point, there's no point to develop their point because it's already logically unsound. So you cut them right there. Don't allow them to go on. Otherwise, they obfuscate the whole argument. So that's teaching logic could be for those going to be preachers. And of course, we'll see how well they've been educated after they leave the school. In the mundane educational system, how well you've been educated is judged by the examination. But in our education, it's judged throughout the life. How you apply that, how you live as a person. We see how they live as devotees. And education goes on. It's like the boy comes out of the school and then he has to be guided still. And throughout life, we need guidance so that we can focus our attention on Krishna. Living in this world with the aim to get out of it. And practically, everyone learns so many things after they stop formal education. When you're out there in the big tough world, which is why these safe spaces, and what else do they have? Non-microaggressions. Yeah. You get out in the big tough world and it's full of macroaggressions. What to speak of microaggressions? But this means that Western society is undermined. For instance, you can't run an army if you're trying to avoid micro. The whole army is based on aggression. So you don't want to be, you're out there in a battle and you didn't shoot the enemy because you didn't want to hurt him. The army is, or politics. Srila Prabhupada said a politician cannot be a saintly person. And Srila Prabhupada also said that he was talking about how what is this? This Samabheda, what's it? Dana Danda. Yeah. And Prabhupada said, I'm not talking about, it's not spiritual knowledge, this is politics. So that's also required. And when he heard about this, when he heard about the big fuss they're making about the Watergate inquiry about President Nixon having sent his goons to burglarize the Democratic headquarters, no, he said, what do you expect? That's what politicians do. You don't expect them to be honest people. It's just taken for granted. Srila Prabhupada's education was very practical also about this world. We learn so many things from him. Otherwise, you're just living in some big illusion that actually politicians are nice people. That illusion is gone in the Western world. Still in India, people have some idea that politicians actually care for us. Very practical. And the Vedic knowledge is very, the Pancha Tantra, very practical. It's for kings, for princes. Here's a quote from a conversation with Srila Prabhupada and Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel, Srila Prabhupada's sparring partner in lively conversations. So Dr. Patel said to Srila Prabhupada, these degrees, talking about university degrees, he said they're artifacts. Prabhupada said, that is upadhi. The degree is an upadhi, a mundane designation. And Srila Prabhupada then said, education is to become upadhi-less. Sarva-upadhi-vinir-muktam. So getting a degree is to, in the modern age, is to get another designation, but real education is to become free of all designations. So mundane education just sticks some more designations. But the real aim is to become free from designations. So all these points to consider in our Gurukuls. There are so many things. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that it would be better when he found that his disciples were arguing over rooms in the plush, posh new temple in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. He said it's better that we sell all the bricks of the temple and use the money to print books. So the same thing for our Gurukuls. If they get transformed into mundane educational institutions, which is the pressure's always there, and we always have to resist it. There's all the time people are going to be going, introduce this, introduce that. What's the harm if we give degrees? There's a great new educational system, and this and that, all the time trying to turn it into some mundane thing. And maybe in course of time it will, but of course we don't have very plush buildings for our Gurukul, so there may not be any bricks. You can't sell mud and grass if we make the buildings out of mud and grass. But the same principle applies. If it turns into a mundane school, then just forget the whole thing. Start all over again. Completely useless. We don't want that at all. Okay, on to the subject of little bit about Daivavanashram Dharma. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita that stated Varnashram Dharma, what is that verse when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about rejecting Varnashram? In the same verse, I can't remember it. Arvanashram Dharma. No, I can't remember. But anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes the point that devotees are not interested in Varnashram Dharma. They're interested in Krishnaika Sharan. That's the full shelter at Krishna. Someone else, you could look it up. But Ete Shabachari. Ete means all kinds of Dharma. Arvanashram Dharma. No, Krishnaika Sharan is the last word. It doesn't rhyme, this verse. Can you get it? Krishnaika. Just look up Krishnaika. Krsnaika. Important. Ete Shabachari means all the things described before. Arvashvanashram Dharma, that should also be given up. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Niskinchan, Niskinchan hoya, Krishnaika Sharan, yeah. Giving up all mundane aspirations and varnashram dharma, one should become niskinchan, not having anything in this world, and loya Krishnaika Sharan, is it? Did you find it? And then taking fully and exclusive shelter in Krishna. So, daivavanashram dharma is meant to bring us to the point of Krishnaika Sharan. It's not the process in itself, but it makes a favorable situation for practicing bhakti sadhana that can bring us to exclusive shelter of Krishna. So therefore, mundane demigod worship is rejected. We were discussing yesterday, should we promote that? Among many other things, it's rejected. Anya deva shrinai tomare kahino bhai e bhakti paramakaran. Twice, at least, in Prema Bhakti Chandrika, Narottam Das says, worship of different demigods is to be rejected. This is the main cause of bhakti, to reject that. Now, the order of our gurus means starting from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and our own Srila Prabhupada, is to establish Varnashram Dharma. So Varnashram Dharma, the following of it, can be considered, because of the Guru's order to do that, it can be considered Aropa Bhakti. Just like brushing your teeth is not bhakti. You can brush your teeth all day and night and it won't develop bhakti. But if we do it because we want to have not bad breath in front of the deities, and we want to preserve our dental hygiene so that we're not disturbed by toothache so we can go on serving Krishna, then that is not directly devotional service, but it's also considered devotional service because we had activities for maintenance of the body for someone whose aim is to engage the body in Krishna consciousness, arop siddha bhakti. And then the same way, if the aim is to form the society so that the whole society is meant for engaging in Krishna service, in the same way, varnashram can be considered devotional service if it is daiva varnashram dharma, clearly centered on Krishna. So varnashram in and of itself is material. It can be spiritualized. Just like fighting is not spiritual, but for Arjuna it became spiritual. Brahmarpanam brahmavya brahmagno brahmanahutam brahmaiva tena gantavyas. Brahma, what is it? Brahmaiva. Brahma, so. Brahma kamasa. Now everything becomes spiritualized by relationship with Krishna. So for Duryodhana, fighting at Kurukshetra was not spiritual. For Arjuna it was. It's the same activity. But because Arjuna was doing it in Krishna conscious, then it became his devotional service. Now, we're all familiar with the term and the concept yukta vairagya, dovetailing. Srila Prabhupada used the word dovetailing. We tend to think that dovetailing means we have all these sinful sanskars in our hearts. For instance, for playing rock music in the modern generation in India, playing rock music. So we may think that yukta vairagya means we play rock music for Krishna. Okay, theoretically it's admissible. There could be an argument made for it. Although, unless one rises early in the morning and chants 16 rounds and follows all the principles, then It's not, you're more dovetailing with Maya than dovetailing with Krishna. That's for sure. So if we have the idea that we can dovetail all these sinful propensities for ghastly, hellish music, then what about dovetailing the propensity for pious activities? Should that be rejected? Something to think about. People have a tendency to perform sanskaras. That's not directly spiritual. It's part of varnashram dharma. Beginning with garbhadhan samskara. That can be and should be done in Krishna consciousness. So all the sanskaras can be done in Krishna consciousness. Something we discussed this somewhat yesterday. Then we have to discuss it more. How far do we? What are we looking at in future? If we're looking at a fully varnashram society, will there be demigod worship? I would think probably, because it's very much part of Vedic culture for people in this world. I would think it would have to be, because there are always going to be people who want to eat meat and they have to worship demigods to do that. Unless you offer to some demigod, then it becomes grossly sinful. So there are going to be people at different levels of consciousness. Anyway, Hare Krishna. We can finish here now with that left hanging in the air for future generations. But you don't know. It could happen very quickly also. The whole society can change very quickly. When did Srila Prabhupada go to Moscow? 1971, was it? Something? Early 1970s. At that time, it was inconceivable that devotees could openly practice Krishna consciousness in that area, which was called the USSR. Srila Prabhupada told Tamal Krishnaraj to preach in China. There was no way any American could even get into China. It was more closed off than Russia. But Russia or the USSR practically, almost overnight, the whole situation changed. Within a few months, it opened up and then Krishna consciousness could sweep in there. So things can change very quickly. Just like in Syria, it was a pretty peaceful country a few years ago. Probably no one imagined what was going to happen. So things can change for better or worse very quickly. So it could be that Krishna consciousness spreads very widely. We shouldn't just sit down and hope for it to happen. We have to keep on, but it can. So we should consider, it's not just theoreticizing, we should be ready. In Ukraine, shortly after Glasnost and they got their political independence from the USSR, one of our devotees, Dhaneshwar Prabhu, one of Prabhupada's disciples, somehow he got to speak with some leaders of the country. And he recounted this several times. They told him that we don't have faith in communism. That's not difficult to understand. And we don't have faith in capitalism either. Do you have something else you could recommend to us? And one of Dhaneshwar's big things in his life is promoting Varnashram. But he realized, I don't know what to tell them. He didn't want to tell them to take up varnashram because he realized that he didn't know how to advise them in that situation, how to institute it. The preaching of Krishna consciousness in general will have to go quite strongly before we can bring in varnashram, because we see even among our own devotees, they're strongly opposed to varnashram. Even one of the big ISKCON gurus in India said to Bhakti Raghasa, why do you want to bring back the caste system? Total misunderstanding of what Varnashram is. And our devotees in the West, they hate. They actually hate. One of the big GBCs, he talked about the V word. That's in English, you say the F word, which F is, the F word means a word with four letters, which is extremely vulgar. So sometimes people refer to it as the F word. So this GBC referred to the V word. That's what he said, I don't like to say that word. Which amounts to Guru Ravagya, when Srila Prabhupada has told us to establish Varnashram. But our devotees, some of them are so much against it. So we have a lot of work to do. But we may say it's theoretical thinking about these things, but we should consider also, what are we aiming at when we're talking about making a Varnashram society? One major point to consider is some industrialism is going to be needed, because we need those nuclear bombs, nuclear missiles. Because Pakistan's got them, China's got them, and if India doesn't have a mobile, up-to-date army, then it's finished. So that's a major consideration. You just can't, unless we can convince the Chinese and the Pakistanis also to take up Krishna consciousness. It's more likely we're going to convince the Indians first. So big questions. In the meantime, we start with our microcosmic communities. But think big. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, who has very gracefully given us this great challenge to give the world real knowledge, adhyatma vidya vidyanam, the spiritual knowledge, difference between the soul and the body. Oh, here's something else, which just as I thought of that, I'll throw this in, because I said it in Hindi the other day at the public program here. I'll say it in English also. Recently, Umapati Swami, who joined ISKCON in 1966, I think before ISKCON even existed, formally. So he sent me a link. He started a blog. So I went and I looked, and on one of his entries, he said that some of our devotees, they don't read Bhagavad Gita because they read it once and they think they know it. And he said, I've been reading it for 52 years and I always find something new. Isn't that amazing? They read it once and think, I know it. And they think they don't have to read it again. Isn't that amazing? The Bhagavad Gita is unlimited. And he said that I've been reading it every day for 52 years, and it's always fresh. It means they didn't get anything out of Bhagavad Gita if they think that they read it. Now they know it. A lot of misconceptions. Hare Krishna.